tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Paul?
Yes, well, I was born in Dundee, in a sort of not a low class district, but at the time I was born, Dundee was very industrial. Jute industry, marmalade, all these things that Dundee did. My father was a chief clerk in a brass foundry. But before they were married, my mother and father worked in Valentine's, which was a postcard producing people in Dundee. And they were in the, my father was in the, on the clerical side, my mother was a developer and printer with the, I was born in a tenement, of course.
What was the date of your birth? The
date of my birth was 1917, and the war was still on. My mother declares that when I was born, the first thing I would probably hear, if I heard anything, was a Zeppelin going over to bomb Glasgow. I don't know whether that's got any significance or not with my future. Anyway, I grew up in a very friendly sort of community. We never had any trouble at all in that community. There were a lot of nice people about. Anyway,
were you well enough off? Both your parents?
No, we weren't too well off. My father, clerking wasn't all that well paid at the time, and during the Depression, what 26. Round about then, he was unemployed for a while, like most people. And he joined the Territorials, and he got on well in the Territorials on the clerical side and became a quartermaster. As I grew up, the Territorials played an important part in my life.
Now, which regiment was it?
Royal Engineers. The 237th Field Company, Royal Engineers, which was a Dundee company. And I think I did 9 camps over the years with my father. He always took me to camp with him. And I enjoyed them, so I suppose it was slightly indoctrinated into the army, I don't know.
Now, what about your education? Which school?
My education, well, apart from the usual, at that time, you had to sit fairly strict exams to get on into a fee-paying school, a higher-up education. So, being non-academic, I didn't pass any exams, so I went to an ordinary secondary school, the Stubbs Well. The result of that was, at the end of my education, I only had a very mundane sort of educational certificate to say that I'd been educated at all. And the result was in later time you didn't have any paper to show how you were educated. Anyway,
did you have any other interests or hobbies?
I started walking, and I played various games. I took up hockey actually, and I played in the local hockey team for a while, and I was generally and had a tendency to go to the hills and things, and outdoor life. I did quite a lot of the local hills, the Sidlaws behind Dundee were very popular.
What about your art? Because I know you.
Well, I was always drawing, and when I went to work as an office boy.
Now, that you left school at 14, did you?
I left school at 14.
So that'd be about 1931.
1930, yeah.
And how did you get a job in office?
Well, there was just a. I'm not quite sure whether my father had any influence or not, but I got into the local printing, the D.C. Thompson and John Lang it was at that time. I got in there as an office boy, and from there on graduated to the art department and worked in there, and I was there until...
What were you doing in the art department?
I was doing small headings, small drawings, and a bit of lettering, and keeping the book really, there was the lowest form of life there. So I kept the books, and generally looked after the head artist in the small office. And that was I was probably there, I think, until the war took me out. But I worked for a long time on photographic layout. At that time, the firm had a lot of publications that went out, local county sort of publications, and they had photo pages, which I was instrumental in laying out and looking after and retouching the photographs. And that's about all I could say about how I got a job and how.
Now, were you aware of what was going on in Germany? As a young lad, and of Hitler, the rise of Germany, the possibility of a war at all?
Yeah, well, we had the news on. There was nothing but radio at that time, and we got the news, and my father was. He talked a lot about it, so we knew what was going on. And then, just early on in the war, there was a call out of young fellas, I think, aged 16 to 17 or something. I can't remember what they called them, but they were the first ones to call out, and you could tell that there was something going on. Just after that time, I decided that I wasn't going to wait.
Now, hang on. What about the actual declaration of war? What do you remember of that?
I can only remember the announcement. I don't think I had really realised the outcome. Didn't think I was going to be involved much, at that time. Most of us didn't.
You hadn't joined the territorials?
No, not. Wait a minute. No. Yes. There was when the boys were, the young boys were called out first, called up. People, the pals and that, we all decided that we were going to join something rather than wait till we got posted to some.
This is before the war broke out.
Before the war. This is when I joined in early spring.
Aprilish.
April, yeah.
No, 1939.
Yeah. So we all joined, and we went to a recreation hall where we assembled. Thistle Street was the start of the fight and forfeit, as far as I know.
This was when they started to raise a second line.
That's right, yeah.
And it was, which squadron was it that you...
HQ was B, was Dundee at that time. That's right, HQ squadron.
And what was the procedure when you went to sign up? What do you remember? What friends did you go with, and what happened?
Well, you made friends very quickly, really, because you were all, you had something in common. You were all in this, put together, and you just made friends quickly. And I could remember that we had to go for a medical, and I can remember quite distinctly going to this doctor. Buchanan, his name was, and I went in and I sat down, and he said, "Your name's Forbes." And I said, "Yeah." He said, "I must know your father." And he said, "Well," I said, "Well, probably you do." "Has he got something to do with the TA?" I said, "Yeah." And then he said, "How do you feel? You feel okay?" And I said, "Yes, A1." So that was the medical. You were A1, and the next thing was that you signed the, what was it, attestation papers or something, which was the first thing you had to sign up, that you were a full member of the Territorial Army. And then after that...
What uniform did they give you, do you remember?
Well, we had very little. I can remember going down to the drill hall, and we stayed at home for quite a while, and we went down to the drill hall. And I had a brown boiler suit and a pair of army boots and a beret with no cap badge. And that was the main uniform at that time. and it was very slow in coming forward, uniform.
Now, what about your training? This is before the war broke out, so yeah. In the period from April through to, you know, to when you went to summer camp. What training did you get, and what were you training as?
Well, we went to a camp, which was the place that the Fife and Forfar of the previous regiment, and it was, I think it was called the Armour Car Company or something like that. They trained on this little piece of moorland at Ladybank in Fife. So we went there for a weekend camp to sort of acclimatise us, or you know, just to give us a taste of army life. And we were all real rookies. But I quite enjoyed it because I had done a lot of open air climbing and whatnot, and I quite enjoyed it.
And what sort of thing were you actually doing there?
We were all given different vehicles, motorcycles. There was an old lorry, just old vehicles that we could get the first rudiments of driving.
Now, could you drive beforehand?
No.
And how did they go about training you then?
Well, we didn't really get any real training in driving until we went to Catterick Camp.
At Annie's, at Ladybank, it was...
Ladybank was just a weekend out amongst the boys and getting to know each other and getting to know the open-air life in the army, as it were. That was all. But we didn't really start. We had what we called drills. We met in Thistle Street and did drills.
Now, what did that entail?
Well, little instructions about revolver drill and, you know, gas drill and just little things. They weren't really very serious. There weren't enough instructors at that time, you see, and with a knowledge of different subjects. We had a retired black watchman and a man from the LDV, the Local Defence Volunteer, and he was teaching us rifle drill, you know. But no, I don't think anybody really seriously, you know, thought much about it.
Were there any characters from that time you remember?
Oh, yes. Well, characters, you got to know them very quickly. I mean, Willie Fenwick, now deceased, unfortunately.
Who was he?
He was a character.
Was he just a gun, a trooper? Or
just a trooper, like myself, yeah.
What was it about him then, Willie Fenwick?
Well, he just was a lad. That's about the only word to describe him. He just had lots of... He never stopped capering, you know.
What sort of thing?
Well, he walked funny and he wasn't always... He wasn't always, you know, sometimes he veered on the unmentionable, but he wasn't a bad character. He was a nice fella to know.
Any others? Anybody else? Then, I mean, you know, at that time, while you were going to the drill night.
At that time, well, I got very friendly with Nelson Taylor, who was a Powder Hall athlete. He ran races at Powder Hall, and I got friendly with him. And
another trooper?
No, he was an accountant, and so he got picked to be QM, because at this stage, if you were a corporal in the boys' brigade, you got a stripe. This was it's so early in the war that nobody...
Before the war, really.
It was before the war, yeah. This is in Thistle Street.
And what was Nelson Taylor like?
He was a tall, well-built chap with terrible bad eyesight. He had a bad eye. Eventually, took him away from the regiment because he couldn't go abroad with us. He was B14 or something, his medical category. But Nelson was a fine chap, and I liked him, and we got on together, so much together, that when it came for him to appoint a storeman under him, it was me, you see. So
that would be when the regiment was called up, was it?
Aye, yeah.
Any other characters? just particularly then?
Well, Alec Gilchrist, you've met him.
What about him? What was Alec like?
Alec was a lively young fella. There was four of us got together. And actually, my father was, by that time, he was in charge of the incoming stores that were coming into Dundee for the territorials. And he had great bales of battle dress. And the battle dress was completely new at that time. Nobody had, there was service dress, buttons and everything, but battle dress came in then. And he got it in bales. And he seconded four of us to go down to his store and work with him, unloading an issue in the battle dress. So Alec Gilchrist and John Crichton, I can't remember who the third one was, but there was four of us there anyway, and we had a marvellous time there. The Territorial Army man in charge was a delightful man, and we were drinking coffee most of the day. It was really a good side issue, because at that time nobody really knew what was going on.
So your special pals were this Alec Gilchrist and John Crichton.
Yeah, and another chap called Ian Fraser. But he was a quiet sort of fella who just attached himself to us. And then there was Jack Knowles. Now, Jack Knowles was in the 1st Regiment, but he was reluctant to part with us. So while the two regiments were in Thistle Street, he was one of our group. And I can't say much more than it was a ridiculous sort of situation we were in there, because we were soldiers for the normal working hours of the day, and we went home at 6 o'clock. And
I think that's probably when they actually called you up.
Yes.
Now, what about when you went to camp to Catterick? What do you remember of that? The summer camp.
Well,
that's just before you were called up.
That was a hilarious occasion, really, and there was lots of things happened there that you wouldn't. That was really Dad's Army stuff. Anyway, we went by train to Catterick, and that was enjoyable enough. And we were under canvas, and they started the old army sort of discipline of laying out your kit, and we had long lines. You know, the bell tents were all in perfect lines, and we laid out the kit with lines. And the boots and the blankets and everything all had to be dead in line. I took a photograph of that, and I can't find it now, but it was really worth seeing, because you wouldn't believe that about 50 tents and 50 pairs of boots all dead in line. You know, it was really wonderful, that. But we had the usual things that happens to rookies at camp.
What sort of thing?
Well, one thing, the colonel, was it McIntosh? I think it was McIntosh. He thought of an idea that, you know, you've seen the guards on parade you've seen the guards on parade in the house, you know, the household cavalry and that, all in perfect line. And he decided that on this rough, grassy square, he would do a sort of parade like this with all his men, sort of thing. But he didn't turn up on time, and the result was that the men standing in line were falling like, you know, like ninepins.
Fainting.
Yeah, fainting. We weren't accustomed to this sort of thing, you know. And there was the usual, you got stuff in your tea that was supposed to be beneficial, I don't know. And we also got stuff to make you loose. And there was a transgression back and forward to the latrines all night. I can remember that. That was terrible.
Now, what about learning to drive?
Learning to drive. We had a very old vintage Lion's T van, which was it only had two forward gears on it, but it was decided that was the thing that most rookies could tackle. I can remember going around Catholic camp in this thing with four of us and an instructor who was inclined to fall asleep quite a lot. And we were going along, and this chap, Scobie, who was had an accident when he was younger, and had trouble with his head. And it was him that was driving this time, and he was going along in top gear, half asleep, and Harry McDonald sitting beside him, fast asleep, and we were going along this straight road, and it was a crossroads, and a motorcycle, DR, was at the crossroads, and he put his hand up to stop, but Scobie never saw it, but he just kept on going, and it was a general that was coming up in a staff car, and he had to stop to let Scobie pass over the crossroads. I can remember that incident quite well. But that's the sort of things that we
was there any comeback on Scobie?
No, there wasn't. No. I think the general thought that was the biggest laugh out. This ancient van crossing his path going along the road.
Did you get any go in any other vehicles at that time at the camp?
Yes, we had an early type of carrier track vehicle, which we used a lot. It's amazing how quickly you pick up.
Was that the Carden Lloyd? Or
one of these kind of things, yes.
It wasn't actually a Bren carrier, it was an early one.
No, it was a vehicle that towed a gun, I think. A towing vehicle. And we had...
any Mark 6s about?
Well, no, we didn't have any at that time. We had one or two... we had a Steer, a Daimler Steer armoured car, which was well in advance of its time. It apparently had self-controls, you know, with automatic control. Anyway, we didn't have much in the way of vehicles at that time, so...
Any other training while you were at Kettering?
Most of the training was just typical army training, almost infantry training. But we were camped beside a Royal Tank Regiment detachment of the Territorial Army from Bolton. And they had a bugle band. And we had a pipe band. So they took turn about at the valley in the morning, and it was all right with us when the pipe band was playing. We quite enjoyed that, but when this bugle band came marching round the camp, waking everybody up, they used to get boots and everything thrown at them. there were lots of amusing incidents there. There was
any more you remember?
Yeah, well, there was this sergeant. I think his name was Price, I'm not quite sure of his name, but he went into Richmond with a crowd and got really drunk. He got really drunk. He came home and his pals decided to play a trick on him, so he had a beautiful moustache, and they shaved off half his moustache. Well, he went on parade the next morning, and he didn't know that he only had half a moustache. And I think eventually some officer came up to him and dismissed him, told him to go and shave off the other half. These are the sort of little things that happened in Catholic camp.
Anything else?
No, there was odd sorts of things. You can't really mention them because they're a bit crude. But I think it was a good thing to get us all teamed up together.
Now, what did you think of your NCOs at the time then? Who were the NCOs you remember?
Well, the NCOs were, they only had stripes on their arm, but they were still pals, and there wasn't any sort of, I'm a corporal and you're a trooper sort of thing. There wasn't any of that. But it was there was a chap called Tommy Maxwell who had been in the regular army and was a sergeant in the regular army, and he got out of the regular army just before the war and joined up with us. And he was a good guide, really, for military things. You know, he was a good source of advice, Tommy Maxwell. And he was a marvellous drill sergeant. I mean, his commands always came out right. When you about turn, you did it on the right foot and everything. He was good at that, because he'd done that in the regular army.
Any other sergeants or corporals? You've mentioned Nelson Taylor. We'll come back to him from when you were a storeman, but anybody else?
Yeah, well, there was this Black Watch fella. He got two stripes because he'd been in the army in India. And he...
Do you remember his name?
Is it Kinloch? No, maybe it was.
Doesn't matter too much.
Doesn't matter. No, Kinloch will do. It was near enough to Kinloch. Geordie Kinloch, I think his name was. And
what was he like?
He was just one of the boys. He was in charge of... you had an NCO, if possible, in every tent. And at that camp, each section of the bell tent was your place. So there'd be about 11 or 12 men in a tent. So you can imagine what it was like in the morning when the tent was closed up because of the rain or something. Sweaty feet and things, you know. So that was a sort of situation until we got on the train again. But there was a very little actual armoured training, shall we say. There was nothing like that.
Now, what about your officers at that time? Who were the main officers before?
Well, they were all people most of them were from Fife. And there was very few outside Fife. I think they were nearly all Fifers. I mean, there was Spencer Nairn, Ali Nairn's carpets, Nairn's linoleum. He was one.
What was your opinion of him then? I mean,
he had one of these moustaches, and we just called him Handlebars. And he was in C Squad, and I didn't have much to do with my own officers. Were Captain Powell, Bobby Bruce.
Is that Joe Powell, spelt Powell?
Powell, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that Joe, who was killed at...
Yeah.
Yeah. What was he like?
He was very... he was a bit upper class, shall we say. But I think he was a very fair-minded man. Nobody... I never had any complaints about him anyway.
So you were at headquarters. So would you see much of Sandy McIntosh or Fergus McIntyre? They were the
not until we all got together in Leslie.
But so Joe Powell was your officer.
Yeah.
Did you see much of him?
Only when you went to the meetings and the drills, as we called them. You met him then because he started off the evening with a sort of, you know, a few words.
Now, you got back from camp and training to carry on, and you were still just an ordinary trooper. Yeah. You hadn't gone on to this job of storming.
I was still a sort of civilian soldier. I mean, I still...
And what about the call-up? Because you were called up a couple of days beforehand,
yeah.
I think.
The call-up was on the 3rd of September. And I just got up in the morning to go to work and didn't go. Went down to Thistle Street instead. That's all. There wasn't any. There was nothing else for you. Just reported. You were told to report. I think it was mentioned on the wireless that you were to report at your station or whatever.
Was that the 3rd, or was that a couple of days beforehand?
No, that was the 3rd. I think it was. You've got me there. My memory's a wee bit.
Okay, it doesn't matter much either way.
It might have been a day or two before.